Begin the Gemara Daf Maseches Beya Daf Zayin. Begin 6 lines down from the top of the Yamed, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous Daf. In other words, Rav Huna Merav said a halacha that was enigmatic, and the Gemara wanted to explain and give a few different interpretations of what he meant to say. He says, an egg is completed only with its yitziyah. When it comes out of the hen, then it's considered completed. Now, one of the last interpretation that the Gemara came out with, the third interpretation, was that it's considered complete regards to what type of quality egg it is. And that is, when it's inside the hen and there it's found, then it's an edible egg, but it's not able to have its own chicks come out of that egg. Whereas when it comes out, then it's considered nigma, then it's completed that it could have its own chicks. And as the Gemara illustrated that with halacha, that someone that said he wanted an egg from the hen that came out of a live hen, in contrast to if it was slaughtered and you found it inside of it, that as the Gemara explained, if they gave him one that was not from a live one, rather from a slaughtered one, then it's going to be considered a mekach tois. Because the reason why he wanted from a live one was not just to eat the eggs, because then it wouldn't make such a difference, and you could just refund the amount of money of the differential between what type of quality egg you're consuming, but rather it's totally unrelated because one is just for eating and the other one is for having its own chicks that it could give birth to. And since that's not possible when it wasn't, then it didn't come out of the hen, it's going to be considered a mekach tois. So the Gemara continues with a similar type of a case, which is also a mekach tois. Hahu de amar lahu, regarding this person that told the vendors, the people, beyi de dirch leman, who has an egg of a male? Bey de dirch leman, who has an egg of a male? What he was meant to say was that the hen was giving birth, was laying the egg that was fertilized by the male, by the rooster, which means that it didn't warm itself up, the hen, from the ground, which it could conceive without a male. So he was asking specifically for one that was fertilized by a male. Yahovulei, but they gave him, the sellers, bey de safn ma'ara, an egg that heated itself up from the ground, and it's able to lay eggs. Now, however, those eggs are not able to have their own chicks coming from them. Now, that's because this term of the safna mi'ara is that it could conceive eggs from the when it rubs itself against the earth on the ground. Now, later on, the Gemara is going to tell us that wherever there's a male, when there is a rooster, then it will not be safna mi'ara. It will not conceive, it will not go ahead and warm itself up from the ground, because it's rather going to do it from the male. Now Rashi explains this term of saf the me'ar is related to the word safuni t'munichal, which means it's covered and hidden in the earth. That's the idea that what happened is he asked for one that was fertilized by male, and instead they gave him one that was by itself, that it warmed itself from the ground, which are totally different things. One can have chicks and the other one cannot. Now Asli came out the kamei de Rabami, so he came in front of the Rabami. Amalahui, so he said to the sellers, mekachtaus hubahadr, so this is a mistaken sale, and therefore one has to retract that and you have to give back the money. So that the Gemara asked, like it had said regarding the previous case on the top of the summit that we mentioned, the previous daf, Pshita is pretty obvious. He asked for one thing. He asked for like a chiri. They give him a table. He's asking for one that could have chicks, and they're giving him one that can't have chicks. It wasn't fertilized by a rooster. So what's the chiddush that we needed Rabami to say this and mention this case that it's going to be a mekach tois? So the Gemara says, no, because Ma'udetema, I would have thought to say, Haila chila kabailahu, maybe really, although he's asking for one that was fertilized by a male, by a rooster, he really wants to eat it. Behind the comma de dircha, so why did he say one that was fertilized by a male, by a rooster? Not because he necessarily wants it to be able to lay its own chicks. Mishum de shemin and tvei, that's just, those types of eggs are fattier content, higher quality of a better egg, and therefore, I would have thought to say that maybe it's not. But on that, the Gemara says, now, even if you would say that, but lamay nafkamina, still what would be the difference? He's still asking for this item. Doesn't make a difference if it's because he wants chicks out of it, because it's going to be a fattier content. Either way, he's not getting what he asked for, so it should be a mekach tois. And that the Gemara says, no, because lameis v'la beini beini. I would have thought to say, then they could just give him the price differential, because he got the product that he wanted. He wanted an egg to eat. He just wanted something that was higher quality, and he paid for that. Now, he didn't get there, he got lower quality. It's still the egg that he could eat, and therefore we would just give him that price difference. However, we wouldn't have to totally refund all his money. Kamashimlon, that's what Rabami is teaching us, that no, actually, it's a totally different product. I wanted something that can lay its own chicks. This cannot. And therefore, you have to refund all the money, not just the difference in price between the qualities of the different eggs. Now the Gemara goes back to what was discussed on the previous daf, which was what we had continued and related to that. Rav Huna Amar Rav said an enigmatic statement of that a beya is considered completed in mitziyasa. It's considered a full-fledged egg when it leaves the hen. So now we ask, what is that in reference to? So we said three different interpretations. Now the Gemara says, v'yibayisim, if you want, you could say a fourth interpretation. My mitziyasa nigmar. What does this mean that the egg is considered completed once it leaves the hen? Imitzias ruba nigmar. When it leaves, the majority of it leaves the hen, that's already considered completed. Now, that's in reference to the halachas of Yomtiv, which is that if the majority of the egg left the hen from before Yomtiv, and then the game came back into the hen, and then it ultimately only gets laid at nighttime, it's still going to be permitted. Although we know, as our Masechta opened up, that Ambeya Shanol to Yomtiv is Aser, here, since the majority of it came out yesterday on Erev Yomtiv, that's already as if it was laid. And therefore, it's not going to be a problem of Beya Shanol to Yomtiv. And that was what he was saying, that Beya Imitziyasa Nigmar, it already was completed, and therefore it's okay. It could be like Rabbi Yechanan says. An egg that came out, the majority of it came out before Yomtiv, but then it came back in. One is allowed to consume it on Yomtiv. That's not included in the category of what Beis Hillel said in the beginning of our Masechta, that Beis Shanol to Yomtiv is Aser, for all the different reasons that the Gemara gave from the different Amiram in the beginning of the Masechta. Vikida Amr, those had a different version, similar to this halacha, but actually to the opposite, that Rav was coming to exclude from Rabbi Yochanan's halacha. What does it, Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, mean when he says that the egg is considered completed when it comes out? It means in Yitzias Kula Nigmar. When the entirety of the egg comes out, only then is considered completed. In Yitzias Kula In, yes, if the entire egg comes out, then it is Avaruba Loi, but if only the majority came out, then it would not be. Ulafukan Riyachan is coming to exclude from Riyachan's halacha. And therefore, even if the majority came out from it before Yomtiv, it still would not be considered completed, and therefore, if it gets laid on Yomtiv, it will be considered a Beya Shanol to be Yomtiv, and therefore, like for example, the halacha of Achanan the Rabbah would mean that it was only completed now, and it was not completed before Yomtiv, and therefore, it would be also. Now the Gemara goes back, Gufa, we quoted a Braisa on the previous staff. The Braisa said, Hashchecheres atar nekeles. If someone slaughters a hen, and one finds inside of it complete eggs. Now this was introduced because of one of the interpretations that we wanted to say for Avun Marab. What does it mean that the bay is considered completed when it comes out? So we wanted to say that regarding that it's considered now an egg, but versus when it was still inside the hen, it was considered chicken, it was considered meat, and hence you wouldn't be able to eat it with milk. And that the Gemara refuted from this price that we're quoting now, that we see that if one slaughters the hen and finds eggs inside of the hen, mutaris lacham b'chalav, one is permitted to eat it with milk. Again, so you see that it's already considered an egg even before it comes out, and therefore the Gemara refuted that cannot be what Rav Huna Amar Rav meant when he said it's only considered an egg and not chicken to be able to eat it with milk once it comes out, because even inside we see it's considered an egg. But that was the opinion of the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yaakov Emer, he says, im hayu ma'ayres begidin, if this eggs that are found inside the hen are attached with the connective tissue to the chicken, to the hen, then asuris, then they are forbidden. Then they are considered like part of the chicken, and hence they're chicken you can't have with milk. Now, on that the Gemara asks, related to this machlekes, so man tan l'hod etan rabban. So who's the tan of the following brisum that says, ho'eichel menivlas oiftar, if someone eats from the dead carcass of a kosher bird. Now, the halacha is regarding a nevela of an oiftar of a kosher bird, that it transmits tumah to the one who eats it only when it's in his throat, which then it transmits tumah to the garments that he's wearing at the time that he swallows it. Now, and which is unique because generally when something conveys tumah, it's even if you touch it or you carry it, but that doesn't apply to the halacha of the nevela of oiftar, as the Gemara learns in Masechtas Nida. Now, that is what this braisa comes to explain, that depending what part of this bird that you're eating is considered that you're eating a nevela of oiftar, and therefore would transmit tumah to the person and to the clothing that he's wearing, and what's not considered part of the meat of the chicken, of the bird, to be considered that you're eating nevela oiftar. As the braisa says, if one eats min hashalol shel beitzim, if he eats from the cluster of the eggs, and that is, that's the part of the eggs that are connected to the ovary of the bird. So for example, if someone eats those eggs that are still attached to the connective tissue, or if one eats minatzamis from the bones of the bird, or min hagidin, or from the sinews, which as Rashi explains, obviously this Tana holds that the gidin are not nice and tam, they don't taste like the chicken, Umin habasir shenit l'shemenachai. And moreover, if someone eats from the meat that fell off, was taken off when it was still alive, which is not in the category of nevela, then tar, all these cases are tar, because for different reasons, they're not considered the basar of a nevela, either because it's not a nevela or because it's not basar, like the bones and the gidin and the clusters of the eggs. They're not considered part of the bird itself. It's not the chicken, it's not the meat. And therefore, it wouldn't be considered eating the meat of a nevela of an iftar, and therefore, it's not going to transmit to the tumah to the person and to his garments. However, if one eats min ha'eshkol shel beitzim, from the bunch of the eggs, which that's a reference to the ovaries themselves, that the eggs are attached to that, or min ha'krukavin, or from the crop, uvenei ma'ayin, or from one of the intestines, or if the fats of the bird are dissolved, are liquefied, and then one swallows them, so then tummy, that's going to transmit tumah to the person, because that is considered basar. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, so that's the quote of the Braisa. And that's related to, again, what's considered part of the meat, the bird itself is going to transmit tumah, and that's what's not is not. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, man tana min ha'sholo shel beitzim tar, so who is the tana of this Braisa that says in the Reisha that if someone eats from the shol, from the cluster of the eggs, which are attached to the ovaries, that that'll be tar. In other words, that we see that even though it's attached to the bird, still one is going to be tar. Obviously, that's not considered as basar. Some Rav Yosef, delay Rabbi Yaakov. Obviously, it's not like the Rabbi Yaakov that we quoted before. Dikar Rabbi Yaakov, because if it would be going like Rabbi Yaakov, however, he said, im hoyim uris begidin asuris, that if it is attached, it's still attached to the connective tissue of its mother, of the hen, of the bird, then it's going to be forbidden because we view it as meat. And from the Braisa over here, where it says that it's not considered part of the nevela of the Iftar, obviously they view it not as meat, and therefore it's not like Rabbi Yaakov. On that, Amalei Abaya. Abaya argues on Rabbi Yaakov, and he says, Mimai, who said, Dilma ad kan loy kama Rabbi Yaakov hasam, where do we find Rabbi Yaakov saying over there that if it's Ma'uris Begidin, that we view it as part of the bird, and therefore you can't have it with milk? That was El in Yisura, that was regarding prohibitions. And that is, even though really you could say that he holds that it's not really part of the chicken, not part of the bird, still the Rabbanan said it's Asr, because since it's very close to being meat, it's still attached to the mother itself, so therefore you could say that they made a decree that, look, don't have it with milk, because we're concerned that you might come to actually have chicken with milk. But even Rabbi Yaakov would agree, however, regarding tumah, that we wouldn't, because it's not actually part of the basar itself to transmit tumah of eating the nevelas of tahar. Now, b'chitam, and if you're going to ask on me, le'inyan tumah nami nigzer, why should we differentiate? Regarding tumah, we should also make the same gezerah, that midrabanan should be tumah, just like we say regarding ister, that we're being geizer because it's so similar to the chicken itself, that we should say that even though it's not, but we're considering it as it is, so why don't we say the same thing regarding tumah? On that, I would tell you no. Rabbi Yaakov would agree that afushe tumahu, because here what you're doing is you're increasing tumah, where that's a problem because that will end up causing loss to tahiris, because when tahiris become tummy, they cannot be used anymore. Afushe tumah drabonu lemefshinan, and rabbinically to increases cases of things that will transmit tumah, we don't want to increase. Now, although obviously many places we do make a decree drabonin on tumah, but where you don't have to say it, like in such a case, in our case, where you don't have to say, we don't want to increase the halachas of tumah, and therefore Abaya argues in Rabbi Yosef and says that it could even be like Rabbi Yaakov, because this that he says that it's considered part of the bird and not to eat it with milk, that was only regarding Isser that he's being machmer, but really it's not really part of the bird, and hence, since it's regarding halachas of tar and tumah, he would agree not to increase rabbinically halachas of tumah, and therefore he could be the tana of the braisa that it would be considered tar. The Igadami, they also say that actually the dig was working the other way around. Man tana min ha'eshkol shel beitzim tame, which we're going on the safer part of the braisa. Who's the one that said regarding the bunch of the eggs itself that they're going to be tame? On that, I'm Rabbi Yosef says the reverse. Actually, it's Rabbi Yaakov. Dama that he says, im hoyim urois begidin asuris, that if they're attached to the connective tissue, then they're going to be forbidden. Now, as Rashi explains, these two terms of eshkol and shol are at variance regarding the way the first version of the Gemara explains it and the way the second version explains it. According to the second version, the term of eshkol of the seifa, Rav Yosef assumes that means that it's the eggs that are attached. No one's talking about the ovaries themselves. We're talking about the eggs that are attached to the gidin. Now, shol is even lower than that. That's talking about that they're not even really attached that much, because they're almost totally complete, those eggs, and they're very close to having the white shell around them, and they're about to come out of the chicken out of the bird themselves, and therefore they're very much not attached. And therefore, that's essentially what Rabbi Yosef is saying. That's really like Rabbi Yaakov. The case that's Me'urais, that's going to be Aser. The case of Shal, which is not even really Me'urais, Rabbi Yaakov would be saying that then it's going to be Tar, because then it's not considered as part of the chicken, as part of the bird itself. Now, but it must be like Rabbi Yaakov, because according to the Tanakhama, August, Rabbi Yaakov says even if the Me'urais is not considered part of the bird, and therefore it wouldn't be Aser, even if it's the Eshkol. Now, not only Abaya argues, and essentially what he says is he redefines the terms of Eshkol and Shal the way we had mentioned it in the first version. That Abaya says, Mimai de Eshkol, Mihanech de Talya be Eshkol, who said that it's a reference to what's attached to the ovaries, which is what we're calling Me'urais, and therefore he's saying it's like Rabbi Yaakov, because he's the only one that says Me'urais is going to make it part of the bird itself. Dema Eshkol Gufe, maybe it's the ovaries themselves. And if it's the ovaries themselves, then that's according to everybody, not just according to Rabbi Yaakov. Even the Tanakhama would hold that, that's part of the chicken itself. That's not the egg that comes out. And therefore, who said that it's Rabbi Yaakov, and therefore it could be even the Tanakhama? Now, v'chitam, and if you're going to ask on me, eshkol gufei ma'ala memra, if it's talking about the actual ovaries themselves, so what's there to say? Of course it's part of the bird, and of course it's going to be aser. What would the chiddush be? And then I would tell you, no. It's not necessarily going to be like Rabbi Yaakov. It could be like the Tanakhama, because it's talking about the ovaries themselves. But midi dehava kukav on the b'nei ma'ayin, it's exactly like the other cases that the Tana mentioned of crop and the intestines, where the avakav, the bas and they're also part of the bird themselves. Yet, why did the Tana have to say that they're going to be considered baser? Kiven de ikka inshi delachli, since there are people that do not eat the crop and do not eat the intestines, se itzach lashem inon, so we had to say that it is considered like the bird themselves, and therefore will be considered the iser of consuming in the veil of iftar to transmit tuma to the person. Hachinami, that's exactly what the Tana wanted to say, which could even be like the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yaakov. They were talking about the eshkel itself, were talking about the ovaries themselves. And that is, although that's obviously baser, so what would the chiddush be? Because kiven de ikke inchi de loy achli, since there are people that do not eat the ovaries, it's a lashmina, we have to tell you that it is considered baser, hence something that would be something that you would be swallowing, and therefore transmitting tumma to the person and to his clothing. And therefore, Abaya says it's not necessarily like the way Rabbi Yosef said it, it's like Rabbi Yaakov, it could even be like those, like the Tanakhama, who argues on Rabbi Yaakov. Now, continuing on this topic about when regarding hens laying eggs, so the Gemara brings the following braisa. Talk about Linda braisa. Kol shatashmish b'yayim, any species that they have relations during the daytime, so the female of that species gives birth during the daytime. Kol shatashmish b'layla, any species that they have relations during the nighttime, so gives birth during the nighttime. Kol shatashmish b'yayim b'yayim b'layla, any species that they have relations both by day and by nighttime, so then it gives birth both by day and by night. As the Gemara explains, kol shatashmish b'yayim b'yayim b'yayim, the Braisa says that any species that has relations during the daytime gives birth during the daytime. So Tanagalis, that's a reference to the chicken that they mate during the daytime. So therefore they give birth during the daytime. Kosha Tashmisha Balala, no Balala, this that we said that the species, they have relations at nighttime, so they give birth at nighttime. Zuatolif, that's a reference to the bat. And Kosha Tashmisha Bimba Yama Bimba Lila, this that says that they have relations, they mate during the daytime and the nighttime, that's a reference to Adam, to mankind, l'chol d'damile, and all that are similar to that, and therefore they give birth both by day and by nighttime. Now, Amamar, so the Gemara quotes from the Brayis that said, Kosha Tashmisha b'yoyim nil b'yim zutanika. So it says that any species that mates during the daytime gives birth during the daytime, so it says that's a reference to the chicken. And I think Maslam Lamay Nafik, what is the halachic ramifications of this? Why do we need to know this? And that the Gemara answers, look at Rav Mari b'reid Rav Kahana. Dam Rav Mari b'reid Rav Kahana, the Badik b'kine shatana goylin me'erv yamtim. If someone checks by the nest, by the chicken coop of the hens from before Yom Tov, which is at the time of Bein Hashmash, of twilight when Yom Tov is starting, where then, as we said before, that it's not going to give birth anymore during the nighttime, because it doesn't lay at nighttime, it only does during the daytime. And he didn't find an egg there. He's checking, it's right before Yom Tov, there's no egg there. And then the following morning gets up before Alois HaShachar, before the break of dawn, so it's not daytime yet. And then he finds an egg there. So the halacha is muteris. Then such an egg is going to be permitted. Although we said that a beish and all the biyamtub is aser, here we're saying that it's going to be permitted. Now, The reason why it says that he checked before Yom Tov was saying even a bigger chiddush. In other words, even though he checked and he didn't find any egg there, where you cannot say that it was laid from when it was still weekday, which is okay, and then of course you could eat on Yom Tov, still we're saying that it's going to be permitted. Because we rely halachically on the braisa, which says that kosher tashmish b'yom, which is a reference to the hen, so then it's noilid b'yom. Now, therefore, we know for sure that it didn't lay this egg at nighttime, and that's what's going to be permitted. Now, obviously, the question is, as like the Gemara says, but valei bodak, but he checked. I mean, I understand halacha is saying a certain fact, but the facts are my eyes checked, and right before Yom Tov, as Yom Tov is starting, there's no eggs around. I wake up in the morning before it's daytime, so it didn't lay it by daytime, and boom, there's an egg. So you're telling me that, oh, it's permitted. It didn't lay it at night because they don't lay eggs at night. So it's mutter. Obviously, it was from before Yom Tov, but I checked, there was no egg. So that the Gemara says, so obviously, you have to say, did he not check well enough? But the Gemara says even more. Even say he checked well. He says, look, what do you mean? I checked everywhere, there was no egg. Eimer, you could still say that it's not a contradiction to halacha. You could say that the majority of it had gone out from the mother hen from before Yom Tov, and then it came back in. Like Rabbi Yechanan said. Now, although that's obviously something that's very uncommon, that should happen, that the majority should go out and come back in, but since it's so obvious to us, halacha, that the Braisa tells us that it doesn't lay eggs at nighttime, so therefore we rely on that so much to say that even if we checked and there was no egg, and I wake up in the morning before daytime and there's an egg, must be that either it was there and I just didn't see it, or even if I checked and I know for sure it wasn't there, that obviously it had already come out, so halachically it was laid by daytime, and then even though it just popped out by nighttime, that wasn't considered the birth, and therefore it's going to be permitted. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, Ini, is that really so? That this is the halacha? But V'amar Reb Yisi ben Sholom Arav says the same case. He says, Baduk b'kina shatan negadz me'av Yom Tov. You checked in the nest of the hen from before Yom Tov, v'loy matzah b'beitza, and you didn't find any egg, ulamachar hishkem matzah b'beitza, and the following morning he checks, before Alei Sashara, and there's an egg, assume that it is forbidden. So how do we resolve these two contradictory halachas? On the one hand, we say we rely on the braisa, doesn't lay eggs at nighttime, and therefore it's going to be permitted, because I don't know how, but it definitely had given birth from before the nighttime when it was during the day of Erev Yom Tov. And here we have another halacha that directly contradicts them and says that it's forbidden. So there the Gemara answers that Hasam b'disafne me'ara, that case which was saying that it's going to be forbidden, is that it didn't conceive from a male. Rather, it went and warmed itself up from the ground. And therefore, those type of hens could lay eggs at the nighttime because it's only by things that how it mates, that's how it lays. And it only mates at daytime. But here, when it does it through warming itself up on the ground, it could be even at nighttime, and it could even lay at nighttime. Now, that the Gemara asks it, well, ihachi, if that's the case, that there are hens that lay at nighttime, if it warms itself up by the ground, so then you're back to the question, Rav Mari Nami. How could Rav Mari had said that it's permitted when you wake up before Alei Sashachar and you find the egg there, if you checked right before? Imim Arasafna, what do you mean? Say that it warmed itself up on the ground, and therefore it could lay its eggs at the nighttime of Yom Tov, and therefore it should be Yasser, because what are the odds that it had one of these other options? It seems like it definitely laid at nighttime. And if you tell me that it could warm itself up and lay at nighttime, so why is it permitted? And that the Gemara answers, B'deikah zachar b'hada. We're talking about that there was a rooster there. And therefore, if there's a rooster there, so then we're assuming it came from the rooster. And again, if it made it with the rooster, it's only going to be giving birth at the daytime, not at night. And therefore, we know it wasn't at nighttime. But the Gemara asks, why? B'deikah zachar nami. Even if there's a rooster, there's still an option for this thing to be usher and say that maybe it warmed itself up from the ground and that's how it's laying the eggs and it can see from there, not through the rooster. I think my answer is no. Amar Avina Gemiri, we have a tradition that kol heicha de'ika zachar, wherever there is a male, there's a rooster, leisaf na'ara. Then the hen is not going to warm itself up from the ground, and therefore we know for sure it's coming from the rooster, and therefore again, that brings us back to the Bryce's case, which is what Rav Mar is going like, that definitely it did not lay its eggs at nighttime. And therefore, we have to say, for whatever the calculations was, as we mentioned, either you didn't check well enough, or the majority of it came out from before, and therefore, halachically, it was already laid from before Yom Tov, and that's why it's permitted. Now, the Gemara asks Va'ad Kama. Now, how far do we say that there's a rooster around somewhere where we say that we'll assume, like Rav Mari, that's going to be permitted because it didn't warm itself from the ground, and therefore didn't lay its eggs from warming itself up from the ground? On that, Amr of Gamda, Mishmei the Rav, it says, Kol Heicha, wherever it is, and we continue on to Amid Beis, if the hen could hear the sound of the rooster during the daytime where By daytime, the sound doesn't travel as well as nighttime. If it could even hear it that far during the daytime, that's considered it's around, and therefore it's not going to conceive from the ground, only from the rooster. Now, the Gemara says that Avi Rav Mari, Rav Mari went so far to do such a halacha lamaisa that he checked from before Yom Tov, didn't find any eggs. He woke up in the morning before Alei Seshach and he found the egg. Now, there wasn't a rooster around at Shitin Bati until 60 houses away, and still Rav Mari relied on this, that it must be that the hen was only going to conceive from the rooster, and therefore he permitted the egg, because again, it must have been not at nighttime, it's only during the daytime, as we said, because since they could hear it, and they noticed that there was a rooster around, it's only going to get it from the rooster, and that therefore is only going to lay during the daytime, not at the nighttime. Now, another qualification in this halacha that we assume that it's only going to get it from the rooster and not from the ground, v'i'ika nahara lo yavar. However, if there is a river that separates, even though it's not so far, I could hear it during the daytime, but there's a river that separates the hen from the rooster, then it's not going to pass over there, and therefore then we're not going to say that it was necessarily from the rooster, and again, then we could say that it's usher, because maybe then it did warm itself up on the ground, and therefore it could have laid it by nighttime. However, the ikamavra, but if there's a bridge, then we say that it would pass over. And again, then it brings us back to Rav Mari's halacha that it wouldn't warm itself from the ground. And therefore, if for sure did not lay it at nighttime, then it would be permitted. Now, however, the ikamitzra, if the bridge that's there is a type of rope bridge, which has a rope that's tied onto two different pegs, one that's stuck into this side of the river, one that's stuck into the other side of the river, and you have a narrow piece of wood that's going across the width of the river, and it's very challenging to hold on to the rope and walk across at the same time, then we're not going to say that the hen and the rooster are going to meet by crossing over this bridge, and therefore again that brings us back to the case that it could have warmed itself on the ground, and therefore the egg would be asur. However, the Gemara does tell us that Havavdi, there actually was an incident, Vavra Mitzra, and it went by over the bridge. So we see that although the Gemara was saying that that's not a likelihood to consider, the Gemara said actually there was such a thing and that it did pass over and it didn't warm itself from the ground and actually was fertilized by the rooster. But be that as it may, the Gemara goes back to what we said before. B'mai kimna, how did we establish the halacha of Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Shaul, which was according to the one that says that it is forbidden when it's found? We said we asked the contradiction. Rav Mari was saying based on the Braisa that look, you checked right before Yom Tov, the egg wasn't there. You checked in the morning before it was daytime and there was an egg there. Now, how is that possible? We said that it doesn't lay at nighttime. So we said, yes, it's going to be permitted because it must have been from before Yom Tov. Either you didn't check well enough or even if you checked, it probably came out a majority of it and it came back in. Yet we said regarding the other opinion that says that if you find such an egg, which seems like the same case, it's going to be asr, was talking about but the Safni Miara when it had conceived itself, it covered itself, warmed itself up from the ground, and therefore such a thing wasn't mating with the rooster, which is only during the daytime, that could lay eggs during the nighttime, and therefore such a case would be asr, even though you checked before and you checked after the night before the morning came, because it could lay at night, and therefore it's a Be'er Shenol Dabi Yamtib, which is asr. Now that Digmar asks, my Irya Badak, now why did it say regarding that halacha that it's only if you checked before Yom Tov, Kile Badak Nami, even if you didn't check before Yom Tov and you woke up Yom Tov morning before it came daytime, that should also be asur because it could have laid it at nighttime. Another Gemara says no, because Kile Badak, if you didn't check before Yom Tov, and therefore maybe the egg was different before Yom Tov, then Eimah Me'et Mahab. Then we're going to say that it's probably that it was there from before Yom Tov, because even though there is a possibility when there's no rooster around that it warmed itself up from the ground, and that's how it conceived, but since the majority of hens give birth during the daytime, we're not going to say, even though there is that possibility, that it laid at nighttime. And therefore, if you didn't check, so therefore it's not for sure at nighttime, then we'll say that it probably was during the daytime and it's mutter. But then the Gemara asks, Ihach, if that's the case, so ki badik nami, then even if you do check it during the daytime, then why not? If you say the majority, and we usually go after the majority, that it lays it during the daytime, so even if it's talking about such a case where there's no rooster around, and there is a possibility later at nighttime, that it should still be permitted, like Rabbi Yochanan said, where we say that if the majority of it comes out, even if it goes back in, and therefore here, if it came out during the nighttime, it will be permitted because it laid it during the daytime already. That was already considered its halachic birth for the halachas of being prepared for Yom Tov. Why don't you say that also if the majority is that lays it during the daytime? Another Gemara says no, because if we checked right before Yom Tov, and it's not with any roosters around, therefore there's a possibility that it laid it during the nighttime because it warmed it up, it could warm itself up from the ground. Now, and you checked in the morning, so therefore there is only time during the nighttime to Rabbi Yochanan l'shchiach. It's not common, that circumstance of Rabbi Yochanan, that the majority of the egg came out and then it came back into the hen. And therefore, when there is a rooster around, now since we know halachically that it's only going to mate with the rooster, and therefore, as the Braisa said, it's not going to give birth at nighttime, so then we have no choice but to say that it must be that it was like the case of Rabbi Yochanan. But regarding the case of where it warmed itself up in the ground because there's no rooster around, to say that it gave birth at night makes more sense than to say that the majority of it had come out and then came back in. And therefore, in such a case, we will say, not like the case of Rabbi Ami, rather like Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Shaul had said, that if you find it in the morning before Alei Sashachar, it will be awesome because we're going to assume that it actually did lay the egg at nighttime. Now, another halacha from Amar Biyisi ben Shaul Amar Rav, unrelated, the Gemara says, Hai tumashchika, this garlic that was ground down, sakanta ligiluya, has the halachas of gilui, that has the dangers that we're concerned that maybe a snake drank from it. Now, therefore, if you find it uncovered, we're concerned that it drank from it, and in the process of drinking from it, it put it in its poison, and therefore one would not be able to consume this drink of the crushed garlic, because that's also included in the halachas of gilui, and therefore that's also going to be awesome. Now the Gemara returns to the halacha of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said three different halachas that seemingly are related, but since they're related to halachas of Yamtiv, where we have Bishami being the linya opinion and Bisael being the machmer, so we quote all these three halachas. The next Mishnah quoted by our Mishnah, we had spoken about the halacha Beish and Old B'yamtiv, where again Bisael was machmer, Shammai was mekel. Here's another halacha. Bishami said that the measurement of sa'ur, which is a very strong leavening agent, is the amount of a kezayis. But however, regarding the halacha of chametz, which is edible type of chametz, there we had a machlekes b'shamay b'shil, if that's the amount of a kezayis, or that's actually the amount of a larger share of a gregris, of the size of a date. Now, that's the Gemara asks, my tamay de b'shamay, what is the reason of b'shamay? Why does he differentiate between chametz and sa'ur? B'shil holds uniform, the halacha is always a share of a kezayis. Why does B'shamay say that for chametz, it's going to be only the size of a gregris, not the size of a kezayis? So that the Gemara explains, because if it would be like B'shil, that sa'ur and chametz would have the same measurement of a kezayis, and not that chametz would be a more lenient share of a gregris, but then lichtev rachmano chametz v'lo b'sa'ur, then the Torah should have just written one of them, that of chametz, and not required to say the prohibition of sa'ur. Because then v'ano amina, then I would tell you, if we find chametz, which it's leavening, which is what the whole prohibition of chametz is not so harsh, because it's just something that was leavened, it's bread, but it itself is not the agent itself that can then make other things into chametz. Its shear is bekezayis, so sa'ur shechemutzi kosher lekolshkin, so then sa'ur, which is the leavening agent itself, isn't it all the more so for sure that would also be usher in the shear of bekezayis? If so, sa'ur the kasar rachman olamali. So why does the Torah repeat and say another term of sa'ur, which for sure it's going to be aser if chametz is aser in the measurement of a kezayis? Must be, B'shamay says, loy melecha shi'uri shalzeh, loy kishuri shalzeh, to tell you that the measurements are not the same. And that's why we cannot learn out sa'ur from chametz, because we're saying that chametz is the shir of a kisavis, which is a larger shir than the kezayis. And now, if we were to learn that sa'ur from chametz, which is a kesevis, then we wouldn't be able to say that, oh, okay, so it's more chomer, so that's a kesevis. Now, this is more stringent, this is going to be kezayis, because there's a klal in halacha that says, da'i lovim and adin li'is kenidin. Because even though it's a kabbal chomer, for sure it's going to be aser, you can't make it worse off, a more stringent shear, than what you're learning it out from, which it would also be then the larger shear of a kesevis. Therefore, we had to say, the halacha of sa'ur too, to say that, look, they have different measurements. The shear of chametz, which is not as a harsh chametz as sa'ur, that's going to be the larger shear of a kesavis. Whereas the halacha of sa'ur, which is more chomer, is going to be the smaller shear of a kezayis. Now Rashi says two different reasons why did we pick the shear of a kesavis, of a date, for the halacha of chametz. Why? Either because, as we find by Yom Kippur, as the Gemara says in Masechtas Yuma, that kesavis is the amount that calms a person down, or because halacha mayish mesina, as we know from Ol Shirin, and that's why it was a share of a kesevis. But either way, Beishame says that from the fact that it mentions sa'ur and didn't just learn that from chametz, must be because they have different measurements, and that's how he knows his halacha that chametz is kesevis and sa'ur is a kesayis. What did Beishil do with those two terms if they hold that they're all kesayis? Says Trichi, you had to say, not to tell you that the different measurements, You had to say Sa'ar and Chametz because the Ikaz Rachman is Sa'ar. Had the Torah only written Sa'ar Havamin and Mishum Dechemutzi Kasha, I would have thought, because as we just said, it's a very harsh leavening. And that's why it's prohibited. Aval Chametz Ein Chemutzi Kasha Ein Maloi. But regarding Chametz, which it's not such a harsh leavening, then I would say maybe that's not included in the Isser on Pesach. Therefore, Tzricha, that's why you had to say Osa Chametz. Now, the Ikaz Rachman Chametz, as was posited by Bishamai, then, but I still would not have known Sa'ar, because I would have thought to say, Mishum de Ruol Achila. There is something that Chametz has, because it's fit to eat. You could eat a piece of bread. I was Sa'ar She'en Ruol Achila, but regarding the leavening agent itself, where, yeah, it might be harsher Chametz, but it's not edible. A Malay, I would say that you would not be Chayiv for that on Pesach. Tzricha, that's why we needed both. Not to say that they're different measurements, they're both Kezayis, but just to tell you that you're Chayiv for both of them, because I would not have known one from the other. Now the Gemara asks, Ubei Shammai, according to Beis Shammai's interpretation, that there are different measurements. Las lahud Reb Zera, do Beis Shammai not agree to the halacha of Reb Zera? Whereas the Gemara will show that it seems to be an explicit pasuk what Reb Zera is saying. The Amar Zera, like Reb Zera said, Pasach HaKasav Bisar, the pasuk in Shmais, when it talks about the Isra of Chametz, it opens up with the term of Sa'ar, as it says, Sa'ar lo yimatzei bevatechem, you should not have Sa'ar. V'sayim b'chametz, and it concludes with the term of Chametz, as it says, Kikol oichel machmetzes. Now, if it was talking about the same Isra, it should have kept the uniformity, it should have said, Kikol oichel Sa'ar, because we're talking about the punishment together with the Asar of the warning of doing that. So why does it change the terminologies? Laimel Chorab Zer tells you, obviously, to tell you that Zehu Za'ar, Zehu Chametz, to say that they're interchangeable, that they're the same thing, which means to say, just like this is Kezayis, so too this is Kezayis. That seems to refute Bishamah's opinion, that they hold that, no, it's not the same measurement. Chametz is Kezavis, and Za'ar is a Kezayis. So that the Gemara answers, Le'in Achila, you're right, according to the halacha of consumption, which is what that pasuk is talking about, Kuli Amalei Plig, you're right, Bishamah does not argue. Even Mishama would agree that Chametz's liability would be with the smaller share of a Kezayis. And that would be like the Sa'ar regarding the consumption, as Reb Zera said. However, keep legally in a beer. Their whole machlekes in our Mishnah was regarding getting rid of the Chametz from one's property. And that is Bishama, Sabri, lo yafin the beer machila. They hold that you do not learn out the halachas of getting rid of it from the halachas of consumption. And the reason is, as he said before, as the Gemara explained, from the fact that we need a pasuk to say both of them. It says in the pasuk, Le'iro l'cho chametz, and it says, Le'iro l'cho sa'ar. So therefore, we do not learn to say that just like by eating, the pasuk equates chametz with the measurement of sa'ar, so too the halachas are for beer. And from the fact that I had to say it, obviously, it's because they have different measurements. Bishil sa'ari, the yalfin the beer machila, however, Bishil sa'ari, no, no, you learn that the halachas of getting rid of it from one's property, from the lochas of the Isra of eating it. Just like there they have the same measurement, so too over here they have the same measurement. Ibn Ami, similarly, like we learned, that this is their machloikis. The Rambam Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, he says, machloikis lein beer. The whole machloikis was regarding getting rid of it. But regarding consumption, as Reb Zera said, everyone agrees that the measurement is going to be with the smallest shear of a kezayis. Tanya Amahoch is similar in the Bryce like this, that their machlekes is regarding beer, but not regarding the eating, as the Pasuk says in Shemais, and the Gir says Chametz, that it should not be visible by you, it should not be in your possession, neither Chametz, and the Gir says Sa'ar, and you shouldn't have either Sa'ar. Zehu machlekes shemid b'shamay u'besil, this is where we have the machlekes b'shamay u'besil from our Mishnah. Shebishamay oimim Sa'ar b'kezayis v'chametz b'kekesevis. He says, look, why are we repeating both terms? We already know from the halacha of Achila that they have the same share. Why are we saying one and not the other? We could have learned out the halachas of Sa'ar from Chametz. Must be that they have different measurements, that Chametz is the larger share of a Kesevis, and Sa'ar has the smaller share of an olive of a Kezayis. No, Zeb is Zeb Kezayis. They both are the smaller share of a Kezayis, because we do learn out beer from Achila. However, as we said before, as Reb Zera had said, that both of them agree regarding the halachas of a consumption, that even the share of Chametz is going to be with the smaller share of a Kezayis. Now the Gemara continues with the third halacha, that there's a machlekes b'shamis hil in our Mishnah, that again b'shamis is the lenient opinion, and b'shil is the stringent opinion. Mishnah told us, ha-sheichit chayev o'if b'yamtiv, someone slaughters a wild animal and a bird on yamtiv, which there's an obligation of what's called kis adam, of covering the blood. So b'shamis said that you're yachper b'deker v'ichasa, that you dig with a spade, and you dig up the ground to be able to cover the blood with the earth, which is the chayev mitzvah of kis adam. Which Bishil argued and said, you're not allowed to do that. Now, the Gemara makes a diuk. The way that the halacha is written, as we just quoted, it says, ha-sheichid. The one that slaughters. Now, what that sounds like is the eved in. It sounds like that after the fact, if you slaughtered, then go ahead and Bishami will be makon say that you could cover it by digging up the earth and covering the blood. But it sounds like l'ketchil aloy, that initially, even Bishami wouldn't allow you to go ahead and slaughter the animal unless if you have earth prepared from before Yom Tov that you don't have to violate any Isturim in covering the blood. Now, however, Ema Sefer, the Gemara asks, look at the end of the Mishnah, where it says, Ubisila Aimim lo yishchit. Bisila say, no, you cannot slaughter the animal. Now, Machlal, the Tanakama, what that can be inferred is that the Tanakama, meaning Bishamai, Saver Yishchit, that holds that you can go ahead and, sounds like initially slaughter, but that contradicts what Bishamai's terminology was, that's a Hashaychit, which sounds like only after the fact. So what is Bishamai's opinion? Hashaychit, only after the fact, if you slaughter, then okay, go ahead and dig up to cover the earth? Or is it saying that actually Yishchit, that you could go ahead initially and go ahead and slaughter it with that in mind? So I think my answer is Holei Kasha. It's not a contradiction, because actually the term of Beis Hillel that said lo yishchet, you shouldn't slaughter, was not actually going on the slaughtering itself. Rather, it was going back on the covering of the blood. And that is where Beis Shammai would agree that yes, like a tchila, one would be able to go ahead and cover the blood. And what Beis Hillel was saying was, do not conclude the action of the slaughtering, which is the kisi of the dam. And therefore, according to everybody, you're right, as the deek was from the Reisha, that the shechita l'ketchil aloy. Everyone agrees, even Bishami, that you're not allowed to initially slaughter. This that Beis Hillel says, lo yishchit, it didn't mean just not slaughter, because Bishami also agreed don't slaughter. It was only saying that don't conclude the slaughtering, which is the entire process of that, which is the covering of the blood, which on that, Bishami says, yes, l'ketchil, you could do that once you slaughtered, but again, the slaughtering is only b'diyevet, even according to Bishami. Which, as the Gemara explains, it meant lo yishchet v'yichasakam. It meant don't slaughter and cover the blood. That is, even though you slaughtered, Beis Hillel holds, do not conclude that by covering it, because there are certain malachas that go into covering it. Whereas Beis Shammai held that no, once you slaughter, then yes, l'ketchil, you can go ahead and cover the blood. But still, the Gemara asks, Ema Seifa, look further in our Mishnah regarding this machlekes, where the Mishnah says, however, umaydim shem shachad, both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would agree that if it was already slaughtered, sheyachper bedeker b'chasa, that then you can go ahead and dig with the spade to cover up the blood. Now, machlal, that could infer that the Reisha, that the beginning, in other words, that Beis Shammai held, that loved the Evet, that obviously the slaughtering was not the Evet, because even Beis Hillel would agree that once you slaughtered that you could go ahead and do that initially. So it must be that this that Beis Hillel was saying that you're not allowed to was talking about initially to slaughter it, which means to say that Beis Shammai held that even initially he allowed to slaughter it. Well, that contradicts the Dika, the Reisha, it sounds like, that Beis Shammai only lets it after the fact, but the Evet, HaShaychet. So that the Gemara therefore has to say, Omer Rabba, that HaChikama. What you have to say is that although generally you're right, the term HaShaychet, it sounds like that was already done, it's after the fact, but here you have to say that means initially, as we made the dig from the Sefer, that even Beis Hillel would hold that if it was already done, that you could l'ketchila go ahead and cover it. Must be that they're arguing regarding are you l'ketchila allowed to slaughter it, and therefore the way we have to interpret the term hasheichet, it means hasheichet sheboli molech. The one who's coming to slaughter it, and he's coming to ask us what he should do, if he should slaughter it or not, and the reason why he was asking was because he doesn't have any prepared earth, and therefore he's going to have to be violating certain malachas to go ahead to do the kisadam. That is what the question in the Mishnah was. Ketzadar Miloy, so what do you tell him? But it's not Hashaychet that he had slaughtered. It means the one who's slaughtering and he's coming to ask, so what's the halacha l'ketchila initially? And that is what the Mishnah told us. Bishamay Oimrim, Bishamay say, and this is how Rab is interpreting it, that Oimeloy Shachit Chafer V'kisa. We tell him, even l'ketchila, go ahead, slaughter it, then dig up the earth, and then cover the blood. And Beis Hillel said that no, lo yishchet elam kein ha'ilah ofen muchen ba'yama. Beis Hillel said that no, you're going to be violating different isurim when you're going to have to go dig it up. And therefore, we do not allow you to go ahead and slaughter it, although slaughtering is permitted on Yom Tov, but these other malachas are not permitted. And therefore, it's only permitted if you have it dug up, prepared soft earth from before Yom Tov. That's Rabbi's version. Rabbi Yosef says, which the Gemara shortly will ask, what exactly is the machlikas between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef in the interpretation of Beis Shammai? They seem to be almost saying the same thing. He says, Hachikama. Again, really the same resolution of Rabbah, that you have to say that Beis Shammai actually held that it's even mutu l'ketchila, but he says a little bit different order. He says, Hashaychet sheboli himolech, again, it meant l'ketchila, that the one who's coming to slaughter, and he comes to ask us, Ketzer, so what do we tell him? Do we allow him to slaughter or not? Beis Shammai, they say, Oimoloi, that you tell him, Leich, go, and this is where he changes the order, Chafar dig up the earth, shachit, slaughter the animal, v'kis, and then cover the blood. Obisulam again, Basil say that lo yishchet, you not let him slaughter, elim kin hoyle of a muchen b'yom, only if there was prepared earth that was soft from before Yom Tov. Now, the Gemara wants to clarify this machlekes, these two different versions of Rabbi Rabban and Rabbi Yosef. So Amalei Abai Rabbi Yosef, Abai says to Rabbi Yosef, says, Lema, let's say that Marv Rabba, you, my Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, and Rabba, must be B'Rab Zeira Amar Rav Kamef L'Gisu. It sounds like you're arguing in the halacha of Rabbi Zeira. The Amar Rabbi Zeira Amar Rav, that Rabbi Zeira said in the name of Rav, Hashoychid Tzorch Sh'yitin, Rabbi Zeira qualified the halacha of Kisidam. He says that the one who's slaughtering has to place Afr Lamata of Avlamal. It has to be this soft earth that's used to cover the blood. It has to be beneath the blood and above the blood. Shem, like it says the passing of Yikra, says Veshafach as Dame, that he will pour the blood. Then that obligation is Vichiso Ba'afr, that then he'll cover it in the earth. Now, in the earth sounds like that it's absorbed in the earth. That means that it's hidden in the earth before it's even covered. Now, Afalei Nemer doesn't say that Vichisohu Afr, that you'll cover with earth, which would sound like that we're only particular about covering it on the top. Ela Be'afr, rather in the earth, which sounds like it's in the middle. Which that's what Reb Zeira learns in the name of Rab. That obviously means to say that you have to have earth beneath it and above it. Now that's what Abai says. It sounds like that's what you're both arguing about. Demar, you my master, Reb Yosef, Islay Reb Zeira, you obviously hold of Reb Zeira's halacha. And that's why you say to first dig up the earth and make it soft so that you have earth beneath it, then slaughter so you have the blood going on top of it, and then you cover on top of it. Rabba, less like Reb Zeira, but the Rabba doesn't hold Reb Zeira's halacha, and therefore he says that no, first you slaughter it, then you let it, the blood fall to the bottom, and then you dig it up, and then you cover it. Because if he held like Reb Zeira, then he should have held like you, that first you dig up, and then you slaughter. Amalei Reb Yosef says to Abaye, no. Bein le didi, bein le Rabba, islam Reb Zeira. Both of us hold of Reb Zeira's halacha, and you do need to have earth beneath the blood when it's spilling on it, and then to have earth again on top of it. But this is what we're arguing about, me and Rabba. Rabba Sav, Rabba holds that if we could tell him, there's nothing stopping him, that he could just go ahead and slaughter, he's ready to slaughter, then what that means is, if there is already earth on the bottom, then we let him to slaughter on Yom Tov. However, Eloi, if not, and that is if we have to first tell him to first dig up the earth so that he could put earth on the bottom because we both agree to Reb Zeira's halacha, then loy. That's what Rabbi is saying, that no, then we do not permit him to slaughter the animal. And the reason is because chayshin and dilma, because we're concerned that maybe after he first digs up the ground, mimlech v'lei shachet, he'll change his mind and he won't slaughter the animal because maybe he's just going to change his mind. No, I don't really need to eat this meat. And what it ends up being is that he had dug it up for nothing, so he's going to be violating the Isser for no purpose, and therefore there wasn't any hetra to do that. But it was a di, adrabba, but to me it was to the contrary. Ha'adifa, I held that it's better not to make such a decree that maybe he's going to dig it up and then change his mind, and therefore there was no hetra to do it. And the reason is because di ilay sharislay, if you do not allow a person to slaughter the animal, if he doesn't already have the dug up earth from beforehand, which because we both agree like Reb Zeira that you have to have soft earth on the bottom of it, you're going to stop people from rejoicing on Yom Tov, because then people are not going to have prepared, they're not going to be able to slaughter, and they're going to be losing on Simchas Yom Tov. And therefore, I say, better let them have Simchas Yom Tov than make this gezeira, then maybe someone's going to dig it up and change his mind, and thereby violating without actually fulfilling the mitzvah of Oichal Nefesh, of Simchas Yom Tov on Yom Tov. And that's what we're both arguing about regarding this order of the resolution that, again, both of them agreed that it's Bisham was actually saying Likitchili Lat is slaughtered, not after the fact. As we said, it's Hashechid that's coming to ask us. The only question was regarding the order, which one's first? Is it the slaughtering first, or is it the digging up of the earth that comes first? Now the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah that said, and we mentioned this just before, that Umaydim, that Beis Hill and Bisham agree, Sheim Shachad, that if it was slaughtered already, even Beis Hill would say Sheikhbir Bedekar Bihasa, that you could dig with the spade in the earth to go ahead and cover the blood of the animal that you slaughtered. So now the Gemara explains how one goes about this, because there are many different violations of the Isurim of Yom Tov that come into play when doing this of digging up the earth. So Amar Bzeka Amar Rav Yehudi says, what you have to say is, because we're allowing one to do this, V'hu sheyeshli dekar na'utz mibba'ayim. What we have to say is that must be that the spade is already stuck into the earth from before Yom Tov, and therefore although we're digging it up now, but there's not going to be a violation of chayrish of plowing, because that would require sticking it in, and since it's already stuck in, so we're avoiding that prohibition. That's why if you already slaughtered, we allow you to do that. Now the Gemara asks, on this interpretation of Rabbi Huda, that he's saying that it must be, that we're talking about that the spade is already stuck into the ground from before Yom Tov. Now, so obviously the way he's interpreting our Mishnah is not because, as one could maybe think, that he's saying a klal of asid dechaloisase, that the positive commandment of covering the blood with earth would push away the negative prohibition of doing malacha on Yom Tov. He's not saying that. He's just saying that, look, if it was already dug from before Yom Tov because you had the spade already stuck in, therefore there's no chayrish, and hence also there's not going to be a problem of muktza on the earth because it was already considered prepared that you had the spade already stuck in from before. But that the Gemara asks, but v'ka'ovit kasisha. So if you're saying that we just have to find ways why it's not considered a violation, not because the positive commandment of the asay of the mitzvah of covering the blood will be deicha the leis of doing malacha, but there's other malachas that are problematic. So you took care of the problem of chayrish, and you took care of the problem of muktzah, but you have the problem of kasisha, of crushing. And the reason is because you still have the clumps of earth that are attached to each other, although you stuck in the spade, but it's not fit for covering blood in the state that it is right now, unless if you first crush it. Now, crushing it is a derivative of the av malacha, of teichen, of grinding, and therefore it's a malacha that's prohibited on Yom Tov. So therefore, what do you gain by having that stuck in? Still, even though you slaughtered the animal, how are you allowed to go ahead and do the process of covering it with the earth, if that's going to require a malacha of kaisish, which is the av malacha of teichen? So that the Gemara says, no, we could avoid that malacha too, because Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav, as we continue the top of Chesem and Alf, we're talking about ba'afr tichuach, we're talking about that it's actually, it's loose earth, and since it's loose earth, you don't have to grind it up to crush it to make it loose enough that it could be covering the blood because it's already loose, and therefore we're not going to have to violate neither the malach of chayrish, as we said, or muktzah, and neither the malach of taichem. But the Gemara asks, there's another problem here. If you're trying to avoid all malachas, but you're making a pit. As you dig it up, you're making a hole. That's the av malacha of baina, of building on Yom Tov, which is also prohibited. And that the Gemara answers that too. Kedrababa. The Rababa said, hachayfer guma b'shabbos. If someone digs a pit on Shabbos, ve'ein etzarech elafar, he doesn't need the pit. Which, if you needed a pit, you're creating a structure, a building, that would be a violation. But he's in this case, of where he's digging it, he only needs the earth, he doesn't need the actual pit. Then, patrala, the person is going to be exempt from it, as the Gemara explains in the first parak in the Sechtes Chagiga, that since he only needs it for the earth and not for the pit itself, you're not considered building, you're not considered chayrish either, which also is when you make these holes in the ground that's considered plowing. Rather, you can be considered actually in the context of the ground, you can be considered makalkal, which is ruining the ground because you're not doing anything constructive, you just want the earth out of it, and therefore that's the old klal of old things that are makalkal, that are destructive, are putter, and therefore we're saying, although liketchila, Basil is saying, yes, definitely, we don't allow you to slaughter because there are these problems. However, once it was slaughtered, then we allow you to do the mitzvah of kisadam, not because it's doing all these loisaseis, but actually because there will be exemptions from it. We don't allow you to look at chila do it, but you're exempt from all these things because you're not doing chayrish or muktzah because the spade is already stuck in from beforehand. It's talking about loose earth and therefore there's no teichen. And also, since you don't need the guma itself, you don't need the pit, you just need the earth from it. So in the context of the ground, you consider makalkal, therefore you're going to be exempt from the problem of boina in regards to the earth itself.